How you guys doing? Smoking hot. For those of you who have guitars, here's an A.
Sorry.
Let's check your tuning. He's running downstairs to see if there's any way we can get maybe a little sound system up here so you guys can hear what I'm doing. It's going to be kind of tough for some of you in back. How's everybody doing? Some of you guys are good players. I was listening to you, Noodle. There's probably a kind of a wide range of experience levels. I talked to some of you guys that were just sort of getting started, and some of you that are farther along in your playing, I can just hear from you warming up. Hopefully there'll be something in the things we're going to cover that'll be helpful for everybody. Most of the congregational worship stuff that we're hearing now is kind of guitar-driven, acoustic guitar-driven. And it's raised the bar for us as players and worship leaders because there's a lot more mechanics that are a little bit more complex than they used to be with the acoustic guitar, you know, 20 years ago. I want to go over just a few techniques dealing with the way that we approach the instrument. The first is our right or left hand, depending on which hand you play with, that you're striking the strings with, whether it's with a pick. How many of you guys use a pick most or all the time? How many of you guys play fingerstyle? How many of you kind of alternate between the two? Good. So a lot of you guys are familiar with the technique. It's obviously fingerstyle guitar, rolling, picking patterns, all that kind of stuff. You can study that stuff for years and years and years. We're just going to scratch the surface today. But the idea is there's kind of, especially when you first start to learn to play, there's kind of approaches that you have. Kind of beginning guitar sort of approaches. Now, one of the ruts that we can fall into is we can kind of start playing everything with that one style. I see some of you guys nodding your head like you know what I'm talking about. So every song sort of sounds like that. And a great way to change the feel of the tunes and to emulate what you're hearing on records and what you're trying to do in your congregations is to approach songs differently with your right hand. Like I played you that pattern, which is kind of just a campfire pattern. If we did something like Everything that has breath, praise the Lord. Now, those of you with guitars, and even if you don't have a guitar, if you've got a pick in your hand, or just pretend like you've got a pick in your hand, and play on your knee or whatever, and let's just practice without even worrying about the voicings. Just mute the strings and good. Sounds really good. Now you hear how we're not playing, it's kind of a 16th note feel. We're not playing just straight 16ths. A straight 16ths. In other words, dynamically, every stroke of the string is about the same volume, right? 1E and a 2E and a 3E and a 4E and a 1E and a 2E and a 3E and a 4E. Now, what we were playing on that pattern just now, on everything that has breath. You hear an accent that we're doing. There's an accent on one. Oh, I love you. Thank you so much. Anyone got a guitar cable on them? A little guitar cable? Do you have one? A guitar, like a quarter inch cable? That's fine. We'll just turn it down. All right. That's all right. I knew that one of you guys would be prepared, more prepared than me. I was the guy in school that always had to ask to borrow a number two pencil when it was test day.
I have a cable for the expression system.
Oh, do you? I probably need a little bit longer, just a quarter inch cable. Anyway, we're good. Hi, guys. Thanks, buddy. That's perfect. Perfect.
Where's the power cable?
Right there. It's over there. Okay. So, we weren't playing straight 16ths. We were playing accents. Achieving that by how hard we're hitting the strings, right? By the difference between just straight dynamics, and we're also achieving that by which strings we're accenting. So to get that kind of percussive feel, it sort of sounds rhythmic. I'll tend to strike the lower strings on those accents, kind of like a kick drum or a djembe or something like that. So it's not just simply how hard you're striking the strings, it's which strings that you're striking, okay? In that example we were using of Let Everything, okay, so you guys see what I'm talking about when I'm talking about those accents to create more of a rhythmic feel? Now that's a strum pattern, and all of this is independent of what we're playing on the neck. I don't really care about that right now because we're talking about the right hand. You could really honestly sit with a metronome. I really recommend you get a metronome. You can get, if you've got like a PDA phone, you can download software with metronome junk on it. You can get it on, you know, real cheap. But sitting with a click and practicing different, playing different subdivisions of the time that you're playing in. In other words, you can play, and this is real, if you're playing in 4-4, 1, 2, 3, 4. These are just whole note diamonds, just holding for one bar each. 3, 4. 1, 2, 3. Half notes. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2. Quarter notes. Eighth notes. 16 notes. Sitting with a metronome and playing those strokes so they're even, all down strokes, It'll develop your right hand so that some of these different feels will be easier to get a grasp on. It always starts, all this guitar stuff starts with real fundamental things. A lot of young players, and I was one of them, was excited to play a lot of different things and to learn cool songs and all that, but I wasn't developing my skills as I was going. I was learning things halfway and then moving on to something else. And most of the great guitar players that you'll hear about were very disciplined about the real basic stuff. Being able to play with a click is huge. You'd be surprised how difficult it is for people to play with like a drum loop or something like that. A friend of mine that is the music pastor at a church down in Vancouver, they're incorporating a lot of loops into their worship service where the band's playing to a that kind of thing. And that is dead on like playing to a metronome. If you drift at all, the band is going to fall apart, whether you're a drummer or the worship leader or whatever. Meter is really crucial. It sounds boring, but sitting and playing with a click is incredibly helpful for your playing. So when we talk about that, let everything that has breath. That's one picking pattern. Another one might be, and this is real popular lately, it's what I call Coldplay worship. And that's just straight eights. I'll get to that. It's a magical, wonderful thing. But yeah, it's called a partial capo. So without messing with the chords, that's all I'm doing. Two and three and four and one and two. All downstrokes. Okay, that's another entirely different right-hand approach to a tune. Another one might be, another one is lots of songs that you hear. A lot of the cool worship stuff that you're hearing is in 6/8. It's kind of a joke among songwriters. You can almost not go wrong with 6/8 time signature because it's just got such a cool feel to it. And that's the 6/8 feel would be like famous one by Chris Tomlin. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You are the Lord, the famous one, famous one. Great is your name in all. Good. So let's play that without a voice in. Let's play it with our hands. Just right hand. Count it with me. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3. Good. Okay. You'll run into a lot of tunes that have that kind of feel. And as a matter of fact, a really cool arrangement, I thought anyway. Blessed Be the Name, which I love that song, the Matt Redman tune. That's a great feel for that song. All of us are doing that tune a lot. in our churches, and we could actually take a song that's in 4-4 and arrange it for 6-8, and it sounds cool. It's kind of a little fresh way of doing it. Doesn't make it difficult to sing. So that's a 6-8 feel. That's another strumming pattern that you can mess with. Now, there's tons of tunes with a real wide variety of musical approaches, rhythmic approaches. We could go over that kind of stuff all day, but do you see what I'm talking about when we're getting away from the kind of the camp? Now, we could do most songs that way. Blessed be your name in a land that is sanctified. We can adapt almost anything to that picking pattern, but it's not really copying the record in the way the writer intended it. So developing your right hand technique so you can play a lot of different kinds of rhythmic things, it helps bring the songs to life a ton. Now, some of it is one of the biggest things that I hear from worship leaders is it's hard to sing and play at the same time, especially when things get complex. I was showing my songwriting class a song of David Crowder's. Sing and play at the same time. And you'll notice at the top of the tune, it's finger style. I'm playing with my fingers. I'm not using my pick at all. I kind of roll it into my middle finger like that. Different guitar players have different styles. Did you notice Billy Batstone last night? Right here. I love it. It's kind of, I was telling him it's kind of the Keith Richards thing. It's Stones. He's got the cigarette hanging out of his mouth. Billy Batstone's got the pick, but lots of guys have different styles, different ways they'll deal with their pick, but I just got into the habit of tucking it in between the digits of my middle finger. So it frees my middle finger up to play. And I'm not dropping the pick. What was that?
How do you not drop it?
I don't actually know how I don't drop it, but I just developed it really, it's not complicated. People have different hand shapes and size. My fingers are rather long, so this may not work for everybody. It doesn't have to stay in your hand. But in that particular song, the approach I was using is it was finger picking at the beginning. I pull the pick out, and the chorus, of course, the pick. Now that's a song that would take some work to play it and sing it at the same time. If you struggle with that, this is what I recommend. Start off with just the guitar part, if you're learning it off of a record or whatever. Good gravy, it's hot in here. Start out with just the guitar part. Play it along with the record. So I would sit there with David Crowder. Until I was pretty comfortable with the part. Then I would just start singing kind of melisma. I wouldn't sing words. I just... not even worry about the words I'm singing. When I got comfortable with that, then I'll start working the words in. open sky is everything breathing, praising God in the company of all who love the King. I'm working my tiny brain in to dealing with this step by step. Because every time I add one more element, I'm playing the guitar part, that requires a certain amount of my mental faculties. To sing over the top of it and be aware of pitch and phrasing and things like that, that's another set of faculties. And then to add words to that is a whole other set of faculties. On top of that, you have to still lead the band and be aware of what's going on. So you kind of wean yourself into those difficult songs that are hard to play and sing at the same time. Take them step by step like that. Learn the guitar part. Just start singing the notes. Don't worry about the words. And then start working the lyrics in to the point where you can do it real naturally. The finger style thing that I touched on in the approach on that David Crowder song is just, all I mean by that is I'm not using the pick to hit the strings. I'm using my fingers. Lots of guys use this approach almost exclusively. Somebody like James Taylor is not going to use a pick. He grows his nails out. I think he's even got acrylic nails, which a lot of guitar players do, where he's actually got false nails on his fingers so he can get a little bit more of that pick sound, a little bit more brightness when he hits the strings. But the idea is these guys are just using their fingers to strike the strings. Another great example is Lindsey Buckingham from Fleetwood Mac, Mark Knopfler. These guys just use their fingers. And so finger style is like similar to what I was doing in that David Crowder tune. There's a couple different ways that I'll approach it, like sort of using my thumb as my bass guitar. All I'm doing is using my thumb to kind of hit those bass notes. Again, I'm creating kind of a percussive effect, almost like a bass drum and a snare drum. And then plus I'm striking the root, the bass notes of the chords. So okay, I'm using my first three fingers like picks. I'm hitting the strings all at the same time. The unique thing about that is you can't do that with a pick. You can't hit strings simultaneously with a pick. Even if you're stroking them across the strings very, very quickly, you're striking them in sequence, right? They're flopping across the strings. The beauty of my fingers is that I can actually hit the notes simultaneously, like a keyboard player would do. When he hits a C chord, he's hitting all three of those notes at exactly the same time. So it creates some cool effects that you can't get with a pick. So let's start with a little exercise. Let's just do a, just play a D, first position D. So all I'm doing, yeah. Where your fingers 1, 2, and 3 are hitting the strings at all the same time. And what you're doing is you're almost kind of pulling up on the strings. Up and then off. You get the idea what I'm saying? Now, in the progression that I played earlier, do you hear that squeeze on those chords? That they're not ringing out? If I was to play that progression with no choke or squeeze on those chords at all, it would just be. Sustaining out until I change the chord. What I'm doing is I'm kind of choking it. I'm sort of muting it with my left hand. All that is that I'm applying a certain amount of pressure to fret the notes, right? I'm squeezing the neck to press the strings of the guitar up against the fret, and that's what allows those notes to ring out, right? If I reduce that pressure just a teeny bit, my finger's still over them, but I'm not fretting any notes. You hear that? That's what choking or squeezing the chord is. So at the end of every one of those voicings, I'm just lightening the pressure on my index finger just enough to cause all those strings to mute. Make sense? Any questions? I don't want to lose anybody.
What are you doing with your little finger?
Just to kind of stabilize it, yeah. Again, that's just that's an individual habit. A lot of great guitar players, they don't anchor it at all. Sure. He was asking about the anchoring of the little finger. Guys have different playing techniques where they'll have their hand kind of in a fist, won't anchor their fingers at all. A lot of guys will use a couple fingers, one finger, that kind of thing. There's no real trick to it. It's just whatever you're comfortable with. So the idea of choking those with the fingerstyle picking approach is all with the right hand. I'm using the pressure that I'm putting on the strings to mute them, so I could choke that voicing. All right? Now that fingerstyle approach is sort of a baseline and striking the strings simultaneously with my three fingers, or four fingers if you want to do that kind of voicing. Another style of finger picking would be like a rolling type of thing that you might hear in bluegrass or something like that. Like, there's a cool version, I think, that we do of Light of the World. Light of the world, you step down into darkness. Open my eyes, let me see beauty that made this. Okay. I hear a lot of you guys are doing that or have some experience with those. Basically, all it is just a sequence of strings that I'm hitting in a repeating pattern every time. In a straight first position D, let's just practice that pattern. I'll play it slowly. Good. Now, just the same as our strumming techniques and our chord changes and all that kind of stuff, always start slow and build up. So, again, metronome is a great tool. Playing evenly and solid until it sounds perfect, and then you can start speeding up. It's a real cool effect, you know. I really like that rolling picking approach to certain songs. So we got our first, which is kind of an alternating bass kind of pattern, and then striking the strings with your fingers simultaneously. We got the rolling sort of thing. And the possibilities are endless. You can buy books on rolling finger, rolling picking patterns, on different types of finger style that you could play, walking bass lines and things like that that you'll find in a lot of jazz progressions, where the bass line that the guy is playing with his thumb is a lot more complicated and it's moving around a lot more, and then he's using his fingers to chord the voicings. So you can get as involved in that as you want to, but that's just another approach. Using your pick and the different strumming techniques, using your fingers for some more variation of that. And we're going to move on to chord voicings. When you learn guitar, basically this is the way I learned. I would sneak up to my brother's room. He had an electric guitar in his room, and he had a chord book, a Mel Bay chord book, and it had these pictures of a fretboard and the dots where your fingers are supposed to go, and then there was a photograph right next to it of a guy's hand playing the chord. And I just started going through and learning the chords and then trying to learn how to change between those chords. So, you know, you'd learn all the major and minor chords, first position stuff, all that junk. And I would go through and just try to learn them by memory and then learn how to change between them and things like that. Then as you get more involved, you'd start to see extensions like major 7 or a minor 9 or these kind of things. Then you'd start seeing slash chords, and I didn't understand what any of that stuff was. How many of you guys are familiar with slash chords? It may be way beneath some of you, but it's very confusing for a lot of players. You run into those chords a lot where you'll see an A slash C sharp. Do you have a question?
Yeah, isn't the bass?
Right, exactly. So basically, if I was to ask you to play an A major, you guys would play an A major, right? Now, if there was a slash C sharp, that means in a first position A major, the root of that chord is the A. Right? That's the bottom. That's the base of the chord, the anchor of it. If you see A slash C sharp, that means you're supposed to alter that A, that bass note, that low note of the chord, to a C sharp instead of just the A. And that means that your C sharp would be right here. So here's your... It's great to work on your fretboard and your strings and know where your notes are. So starting with an open A, that's a B flat. That's a B. That's a C. There's my C sharp, right? So that chord tells me that I'm supposed to be playing this over the top of my A. So that sounds like this. Okay? If you're playing a song like Light of the World, there's a lot of slash chords in that. It doesn't sound right if I was to play. Here I am to worship. Here I am to bow down. Here I am. Playing straight first position chords, D, A, D. Now, the way he wrote it, if I include those slash chords, it's here I am to worship, here I am to bow. A with a C sharp, here I, D with an F sharp in the bass, G, repeat. A with a C sharp, D with an F sharp. That's much more musical. It complements the melody line, and it sounds like, basically, as a guitar player, you're making more music. You don't need to depend on a bass player to play that line and give you the bottom of all those chords. You're doing it yourself. So it gives you more versatility as a guitar player to play those slash chords. They can get a little complicated at times if you're not familiar with the notes on your guitar. But everybody knows, if you don't, write them down. E, A, D, G, B, E. Those are the notes of your guitar from low to high, right? I always remembered it as elephants are darn good bubblegum eaters. That's the way I remembered it. I don't know why. And on every one of those starting points on those strings, the intervals are always exactly the same. If you start off in low E, the first fret's going to be what? F? F sharp? G sharp? Good, and we're back to where we started. Now that same pattern is going to follow on whatever string you're at. When you're looking at slash chords, that's going to be helpful. When you see a B flat with an E flat in the bass, B flat slash E flat, there's my B flat, right? My E flat would be right there, half step below the E. That's called a 4/5 chord because I'm playing in the tones of the scale are numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, right? The chord that I'm playing, the B flat, if you were to walk up, I'll pick something easier. Let's do a B with an A in the bass. I'm not going to get into that. That's theory and stuff like that. Don't worry about that. But know the notes on your guitar. That'll help a lot. That's real rote. It's not complicated. You can get posters, all kinds of stuff that'll help you remember them. You can even put little stickers on if you want on your fretboard so you can remember them. And it'll help you with those slash chords to locate those notes quickly. Now, one of the things that you'll see a lot in... How are we doing time-wise? We're doing good. Okay. A lot of things you'll see in the modern worship stuff is, and I see them differently on different charts. Sometimes they're called add 9, sus 4. Sometimes they're called 2 chords. You ever seen D2 or E2, those kind of things? It's complicated and kind of confusing when you read them on charts. But basically all it means is you're adding the second degree of that major scale, which is the same as the ninth, into the voicing. So what's confusing about guitar is as opposed to a keyboard where it's very linear, guitars, a lot of the times you're playing partial voicings. You're suggesting voicings. You're not going to play it out linear like you would on a keyboard. Number one, because we don't have enough fingers. And number two is just the nature of the instrument, the tuning, the intervals between the strings, that kind of thing. So a lot of times you'll play elements of the voicing that will kind of get the idea across. And one of those things is these two chords, if you want to call them that. It's the difference between first position D. And a D2 would be played like this. I just drop my finger off that high E string, so it's just ringing out. It's just an open E. Right? Go to an A chord, first position A. Drop your finger off of the B string and just let it ring out. Okay? Play an E chord. Now, if you were playing it up on the neck, like a bar chord version, like this, it would sound like that. It's kind of got a more, kind of an airy kind of atmospheric sort of sound. It's kind of dreamier sounding. Almost everything that you're hearing in modern worship is these kind of voicings. Like, if I was to play I Could Sing of Your Love Forever in E, in strictly first position chords. Over the mountains and the sea, your river runs with love for me, and I will open up my heart and let the healer set me free. I'm happy to be in the truth, and I will daily lift my hands for that's all just straight first position chords. E, F sharp minor, A, B. Now, if I employ these two chords or add nine sus fours or whatever you want to call them, then I get that. Now, what the effect is that you're hearing is it kind of has pedal tones that are ringing throughout all those changes. Those notes never change. In the progression that I just played, my B and my high E are ringing out unaffected through that whole progression. They kind of anchor it the entire time. There it is. My F sharp minor. There it is again. My A2. See what I'm talking about? Okay, so you see what I'm talking about? You see the difference that it makes in the just kind of the sound of the progression? It opens it up. It gives it a lot more of that modern worship sort of sound as opposed to just the straight first position chords.
Now the other extensions are more things like
major nines and minor sevens and 13 chords and that kind of junk. There's a song of mine called Not By Might. And the first chord is a C minor 9. Second chord is an F13. A flat 13, a B flat 7, back to the C minor 9. It's just got more of a jazz sort of feel. It's not appropriate for a ton of the worship stuff that you're doing. If you're a songwriter and you like to work that kind of stuff in, and there is some cool stuff like the one I was playing you earlier, gives me pure joy, or what is it? Gives me pure joy to walk with you, and that joy becomes my strength. Gives me pure joy to sing your name, Jesus. Jesus. That's a cool worship tune with some more jazz voicing, some more extensions. So those two chords or add nine sus fours, whatever you want to call them, the more complicated extensions like 13 chords and minor nines and major sevens and all that, again, any chord book, any chord calculator can give you all those voicings. So experiment with stuff as you're working up your set to try some different, try different flavors, try different progressions to kind of freshen it up. I try to do that a lot with songs that we do too much, that are just wildly popular and people want to continue singing them, but it's nice to give them a little bit of a facelift and so they stay fresh. A real quick word on things like ornamentation. What you'll hear in a lot of players, I do this a lot, is there's little kind of melodic things that I'll do, hammer-ons and pull-offs. Have you heard those expressions before? A hammer-on is just striking a string and I don't actually pick it again. I just hammer my finger on the string. See what I'm talking about? And a pull-off is the exact opposite. I pull my finger off the string and strike it. Okay? Now, the cool thing about that is you can do a lot of things like I was doing this a little bit this morning on Take My Heart. Holiness, holiness, is what I long for. James Taylor, you know that the classic James Taylor lick. There's pull-offs and hammer-ons on that. Okay? Those are hammer-ons and pull-offs. Those are great ways to play inside of the chords that you're playing on a song. There was a song I wrote several years ago called Then There's the Cross. And it was a real simple progression, but what I wanted to do is I wanted to create some movement in the chords to follow what I was singing. So I would use hammer-ons and pull-offs to follow myself on the guitar. So I would sing, the melody is, when I can't walk the road I travel, when I can't take another step, starts in G. When I can't walk the road I travel, when I can't take another step to C. When I am tired and I have no strength, back to the one. Okay? So what I did with my hammer-ons and pull-offs is I added a parallel line to what I was singing. When I can't walk the road I Isn't that cool? So you can create some of that ornamentation inside of your chords. I'm not changing the chords. I'm still playing my G, but I got some room inside of that G. See what I'm talking about? Now there's no lexicon for this. It's just experimentation. It's just messing around with these chords. You hear country players play inside of chords like that all the time. It adds a lot of character to your playing, and it just allows you, again, to make more music. I never liked being dependent on other musicians to make music. I always felt like I wanted to write stuff that would allow me to stand alone with just my guitar. And I didn't have to have a bass player or a piano player up there, or the song would fall apart. So that's what led me to try to play a lot of these things myself, is to try to make myself more self-sufficient and make more music with my guitar. Another example of the hammer-on and pull-off, and you'll hear this in a lot of different kinds of music. There's a song called Lord, I Come to Seek Your Face. It was on a Calvary Chapel record a few years ago. And it started off with a... this little pedal tone figure. All I'm doing is fretting the B and the E string at the third fret. And I'm striking the strings at about the D string. I'm not hitting the low A and the E. Nice, isn't it? A lot of that is just finesse with your pick, because all these notes don't belong in the chord, right? So I'm laying off of the low A and the E, and I'm just hitting the top four strings. All right? And then I hammer on at the fifth fret on the high E string. And then I pull off. That's another example of that ornamentation. Another one was we did a version of Will the Circle Be Unbroken.
circle be unbroken by and by, Lord, by.
Again, it's that hammer-on pull-off stuff, right? It's really cool. Very, very country-ish. Another thing that you'll hear a lot, and I touched on it already, is the pedal tone figures, where there's elements of the voicing that are ringing unaffected through all the changes. A good example of that is that Tim Hughes song. Doing is, can you guys hear the pedal tone in that figure? It's a low E, right? That's ringing through the whole progression. I'm never touching it. Now this other thing that I'm doing is I'm just, again, it's the muting with your right hand. Just an octave, right? There's my E. There's another E. I'm hitting the same note, just an octave apart, and I'm muting everything else. And I'm doing all that with my left hand. I'm laying. This is it's a little bit more complex chording technique. But as you get into like chord books and things like that, you'll see in a chord diagram, you'll see the X's across the strings, right? Have you seen that before? Oh, you've seen it. Okay, good. Basically, it means don't play those notes. They don't belong in the chord. So there's an element of that subtle element of learning to use your fingers to mute strings, not just to fret them, but to make sure certain other ones don't ring out. And that's what technique you're employing in the intro to the Holy Holy. The only notes that I'm letting ring are the low E, which is the pedal. And then this octave figure. I'm not letting my D string ring out. I'm not letting my B and my high E string ring out. You see my little finger kind of patting it like the felts on a piano might do with the sustain pedals. None of those other strings are ringing out except that octave figure. And then over the top of that, I got that low E for the whole thing. Okay? I actually wasn't. That was a full six-string voicing. So it's like a standard F sharp. I'm just using my second finger. Right. I kind of got spider fingers, so that may not be the easiest way for you to play it. Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of guys would use their thumb over the top of the neck. Another example is that figure, and people love this one. In the Chris Tomlin song that we did this morning, If God Is On Our Side. Do you're starting off with an A chord, right? In classic rock guitar form, you're not hitting all the strings. The high G, B, and E don't even matter. I'm just hitting the A, the D, and the G. Sorry, the high B and E don't matter. So I'm hitting, starting off with the A chord. That's my first chord. The next thing I'm doing is I'm using my little finger, and I'm fretting the D string at the fifth fret. You got that? Drop it a half step. And pull off entirely. So it's... That's an A sus. So the A is the pedal. That's the same stuff that you hear in all that old rock and roll stuff. There's a pedal tone that's hanging through the whole thing, and then you're moving around. So that Chris Tomlin lick, it's just a variation of that. This is all in A. There's no chord change. The only subtle change is just going to a sus. But the chord, the A chord doesn't change. Good. So that's another example of what I'm talking about with that pedal tone figure. You'll notice there's something that that I'm doing. Oh, we got to wrap up. Okay. All right, any questions?
Capo.
Oh, here's a real quick thing. Believe me, it's worth it. Here's a little trick for you. I love capos. I use them all the time because it allows you to play those cool voicings in awkward keys like E flat or F or B flat or whatever. So I love them. Definitely use your capos. The one thing I don't like is I don't like the silence and then the as you take off your capo or you put it on. So here's a really cool trick. What I'll do is I'll end the song that I'm finishing up with a bar chord form higher up the neck. I'll show you what I'm talking about. Let's say I'm going to I'm finishing a song in D. And I want to go to Here I Am to Worship in E. Instead of going, what I'll do is, so the cool thing is it allows playing that bar chord allows all those notes to sustain. I'm not stopping my making music. And then it also frees me up because I've got a chord that's ringing out. And I can move my capo wherever I want without making any noise and without stopping. Cool? All right. You guys are great. Love you. Go.